नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we are reading from the seventh canto, chapter 4, text 31 and 32, and we are going to chant text 31. Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavat Sava Bhutanam Eka Priya Suhrittama Brahmanya Sila Sampana Satya Sandhya Jitendriya Atmavat Sava Bhutanam Eka Priya Suhrittama Brahmanya Sila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavat Sava Bhutanam Eka Priya Suhrittama Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavat Sava Bhutanam Eka Priya Suhrittama Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavatsava Bhutana Eka Priya Suhrittama Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavatsava Bhutana Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavatsava Bhutana Eka Priya Suhrittama
Vaishnavis
Brahmanya Shila Sampana Satya Sando Jitendriya Atmavatsava Bhutanam Eka Priya Suhrittama
Anyone else? Brave volunteers? Alrighty. Brahmanya, cultured as a good Brahmin. Shila Sampana, possessing all good qualities. Satya Sandha, determined to understand the absolute truth. Jitendriya, Jitta Indriya, fully controlling the senses and mind. Atmavat, like the Supersoul, Sarvabhutanam, of all living entities, Ekapriya, the one beloved, Surittama, the best friend. Translation, this is for both verses. The qualities of Maharaj Prahlad, the son of Hiranyakasipu, are described herewith. He was completely cultured as a qualified Brahmin, having very good character and being determined to understand the absolute truth. He had full control of his senses and mind. Like the Supersoul, he was kind to every living entity and was the best friend of everyone. To respectable persons, he acted exactly like a menial servant. To the poor, he was like a father. To his equals, he was attached like a sympathetic brother. And he considered his teachers, spiritual master, and older godbrothers to be as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was completely free from unnatural pride that might have arisen from his good education, riches, beauty, aristocracy, and so on.
I was in Detroit. I mean, in other words, Prahlad Maharaj actually had reasons to be proud, although he wasn't. I was in Prabhupada's, it was a class in Detroit, and this one devotee who was famous for waxing long and, anyway, he stood up and said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen, I'm the most sinful, I'm the most this, I'm the most that." Prabhupada said, "Actually, you're not the most anything. Please sit down." So, it's certainly speaking for myself, we don't really have anything to be proud of, although we tend to be quite proud. But Prahlad Maharaj actually had reasons to be proud, and yet was not. Purport. These are some of the qualifications of a Vaishnav. A Vaishnav is automatically a Brahman, because a Vaishnav has all the good qualities of a Brahman. Samo damastapaso cham shantirajavamevacha gyanaviganamastikyam brahmakarmasvabhavajam. Peaceful, self-controlled, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, wisdom, knowledge, and religiousness. These are the qualities by which the Brahmanas work. These qualities are manifest in the body of a Vaishnav. Therefore, a perfect Vaishnav is also a perfect Brahmana, as indicated here by the words, Brahmanya Sila Sampana. A Vaishnav is always determined to understand the absolute truth, and to understand the absolute truth, one needs to have full control over his senses and mind. Prahlad Maharaj possessed all these qualities. A Vaishnav is always a well-wisher of everyone. The six Goswamis, for example, are described in this way, Dira Dira Janapriyao. They were popular with both the gentle and the ruffians. A Vaishnav must be equally popular. One time Hari Sari, he told me, he said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, everyone likes you. Prabhupada's response was, because I like everyone. People could sense it. A Vaishnav must be equal to everyone, regardless of one's position. Atmavat. A Vaishnav should be like the Paramatma. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridayeshe Arjanatishtate. Paramatma does not hate anyone. Indeed, he is in the heart of the Brahman, but he's also even in the heart of a pig. As the moon never refuses to distribute its pleasing rays even to the house of a chandala, a Vaishnav never refuses to act for everyone's welfare. A Vaishnav is always obedient to the spiritual master, Arya. The word Arya refers to one who is advanced in knowledge. One who is deficient in knowledge cannot be called Arya. At the present, however, the word Arya is used to refer to those who are godless. This is the unfortunate situation of Kali Yuga. The word guru refers to the spiritual master who initiates his disciples in advancement of the service, science of Krishna or Krishna consciousness. As stated by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Shri Bhagavan Mantaropadikshay Gurova Iti Arta. Hare Krishna. Omagana Tamarandasya Gana Gana Salaka Jaksha Shamilatam Gana Tazani Shri Gurave Namaha. I was thinking, how do we measure success? And as the Bhagavatam often does, it is juxtaposing two examples. We have Prahlad Maharaj on one end of the spectrum, and we have Haranyakasipu on the other. If we look at Haranyakasipu as gold cushion, as Sri Narayan pointed out, gold and soft bed, Prabhupada would say, the two interests of the materialists, Haranyakasipu had these in abundance, more than we can even imagine. And yet we find that he was always disturbed. He was an angry, unhappy person. He was always agitated and... On the other hand, we have Prahlad Maharaj, who was an innocent boy. On one hand, just an innocent boy. And he had not made all the endeavors that Haranyakasipu had really worked hard to obtain his position. And yet we find Haranyakasipu with everything, not happy. We find Prahlad Maharaj, an innocent boy, with just a child, and completely decorated with all good qualities and happy in every condition. So one should pause to question, as you know, we used to do that play with Sanatana Goswami and the touchstone, and the whatever it was, the man who asked for the touchstone and received it, then he contemplated, but he was keeping it in the trash heap. Therefore, he didn't consider this touchstone very valuable. Therefore, what was his conclusion? Oh, he must have something more valuable. So we should calculate. I was in Bangladesh, and there was one, I was talking to some young man, college student, and there was a nice program at the temple. We invited him, and he couldn't make it. So we, you know a secret for staying awake? When you listen to the speaker, try to think of three good questions. If you make a goal of trying to think of three good questions that you're going to ask, it'll help you. It engages the intelligence. It'll help you stay awake. Also, Prabhupada said if you rest your head, your back, or your, what is the other thing? Head, and whatever. Third thing, if you rest them, it sets the body up for sleep. Close your eyes. There it is, my friend. I hope it's of some use to you. Anyway, I was in Bangladesh. And I asked this, invited this young man to the program at the temple that night. He said, no, I don't have time. I have to study for my tests. I'm taking some tests. I said, okay. I said, why? He said, well, I want to get a good grade. I said, okay, why? He said, well, I want to graduate with honors. I said, okay, why? He said, well, I want to get in a good doctoral program in the United States. I said, okay, why? I want to get a good job. I want to have a PhD, which in Australia called permanent head damage. We're not flat earthers, but just as a point. I want to get a PhD. And I go, why? I want to get a good job. I said, why? He said, well, I want to get a good house. I want to get a good wife and a good house and a big screen TV. I said, why? He said, well, I want to become happy. I said, aha, that is your actual goal. You're going through circuitous route. But the goal is to become happy. I said, I'm coming from America. It's awash with PhDs and beautiful women and big screen TVs and big houses. And they're not happy. Why don't you learn by seeing? And it actually had an effect on the guy. Thought about it for me. I said, I've come here. I'm here in Bangladesh. You know? So we all have measures floating in our head of what will make us happy. We have so many, I mean, you know, we all have visions of sugar plums dancing in our heads. What's going to make us happy? And we have different standards. Why? Chanaka Pandit says that if you go to the Adivasis, you go to the Aborigines, you can put, pearls before swines? I don't mean to criticize the Adivasis or Aborigines, but Chanaka Pandit says they'll walk right over the pearls and they'll go for these little gunja berries. Little gunja berries grows on the bushes, little red, white, and black berry. That, because they can make a nice necklace with that, they like it very much. So they all have their measures and standards. I guess I'll say it this way. I was in Los Angeles, and Prabhupada was on a radio show, and we were all where the gift shop, or I guess where the restaurant is now, used to be the Brahmacharya Ashram. It was at Prashalam Hall, I think, actually. And we were all gathered around the radio, like in the old days, listening to a baseball game, you know, and the person would narrate it. We were all, it must have been 25, 30 devotees gathered around the radio, and Prabhupada was on the show. And the show was, I think it was Joe Pine or anyone who's an old, yeah, exactly. And his point was to, you know, he invited someone on the show to just chop and slice and dice them and cut them down to, you know, and just slap them silly. That was the Ross of the show. So the devotee said to Prabhupada, you know, we don't think you should go on this show. The man is not respectful. Prabhupada said, that's all right. You know, Prabhupada, he didn't say I'm an old Calcutta boy, but, you know, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada asked what was the audience. And I forget, it was a large audience, maybe even a million people. And Prabhupada said, well, they'll hear Krishna, let us go. So they went. And the guy went after Prabhupada. The first thing he said, it's the first time I heard Prabhupada use this example. He went after Prabhupada and said, you know, you've come to us from India to the West, and we're talking 1970, so you can imagine India's condition. India's now becoming first world, except for the recent blowout on their lights, and America's becoming, in many ways, third world. Certainly those of us who grew up in America in the 50s, America's going downhill. So, but the man in that time, in his arrogance, said to Srila Prabhupada, you know, what have you come here for? We've got everything. India's a basket case. Why don't you go back and help India? And he uses an argument. He said, the death rate is so high in India. Prabhupada said, the death rate's the same everywhere, 100%. Which kind of threw the guy off his game a bit. And then he recuperated, he came back. And he said, but, you know, you have your primitive mysticism, you know, or not mysticism, mythical, you know, like, it's like Greek mythology. He said, you know, you say the world is flat. Common misunderstanding. They're thinking, because just like Atma can mean the body, it can mean the mind, it can mean the soul. So when you say Bhumandala or whatever the word is, that word can mean the planet Earth. It can actually mean, it can refer to the subcontinent of India, it can refer to the planet, and it can refer to the solar plane. Now the solar, you know, the plane of the planets is more or less flat. There's a little variation, but it's often referred to as a plane, right? So when it's used in that sense, it's taught in the Bhagavatam or in the Vedic literature, it's talking that as flat. People misunderstand. So the guy said to Prabhupada, you say the world is flat. Prabhupada's response was, everywhere I walk it is. And then he chuckled and he said, except for New Vrindavan, because New Vrindavan had the hills, you know. So the man, you know, became flabbergasted. He just couldn't, it's like wrestling, he just couldn't get a hold on Prabhupada. And in exasperation, he said, well, what would happen if everyone became Krishna conscious? Prabhupada replied, don't worry, there'll always be fools like you who won't. At which point, the guy had just been punched in the nose and he just didn't know. Prabhupada just, you know, Maharaj said yesterday, kids, don't try this at home. Prabhupada did counsel us when he got back. He said, I can say this, you cannot. Prabhupada said, this is the special dispensation for old men and little children. They can go anywhere and they can say anything. So we have to be a little circumspect or a little cautious sometimes. Not that we should pull our punches, but... So at that point, Prabhupada just took over. The man was speechless. In fact, he had a, what do you call it, a co-host, but an assistant, really. It was a lady, some young lady. And so she kind of like, while he was recovering, she stepped in, tried to get a grip on Prabhupada. She said, why do you shave your head? Prabhupada said, why do you shave your legs? Prabhupada said, actually. Prabhupada said, you better to have a cool brain and warm legs. You need a cool brain for understanding spiritual life. And she was just knocked out of the game. We never heard from her again. And Prabhupada just took over the show. Prabhupada spoke for about 10 minutes, had kirtan and left. It was completely blissful, you know. But the point I wanted to make, and Prabhupada went on, that's the point I wanted to make. Prabhupada went on to describe what is the symptom. He said that actually if everyone became Krishna conscious, and many places Prabhupada doesn't say everyone. He says even like a percentage, like if 10% or sometimes Prabhupada just gives a percentage. Prabhupada said that it'll only rain in the evening after all the animals are in. He said every tree will give a fruit and a flower. Prabhupada explained this on the radio. Prabhupada said that the weather will never go above a certain heat or below a certain, you know. He was describing it'll be like Satya Yuga. And not only that, people will be decorated with these qualities. So Krishna consciousness is actually quantifiable. It is not just, oh, I'm feeling in my heart and you're feeling in your heart and, you know, Jesus loves me. No. There has to be symptoms. Like, how do you know the wind is blowing? Young man, is the wind blowing? How do you know? If you're inside, how do you know? Sound's a good one. Okay, we'll take sound. But what's another way you can know? Yeah, you see something. But you don't see the wind. Of course, in America, with acid rain, you can actually see the wind. But in an ideal state, you can't actually see the wind, but you can see its symptom. Isn't it? And sound is also good. You can see by its symptom. Similarly, you can see Krishna. It has symptoms. It's not an amorphous, you know, what is it? I'm okay, you're okay. No. There's symptoms. And here we're getting at the script. We can also measure our own advancement. We can measure how are we advancing in spiritual life. The spoon in the soup does not taste the soup. Picture the spoon. It's in the middle of the soup. And it's not tasting it. In a similar fashion, I saw a bumper sticker. The one who says money can't buy happiness doesn't know where to shop. Have you ever seen that one? But that's not a fact. I had a great experience with Ambarish. You know, Ambarish, it's a long story, and I'll just tell part of it. But I was sitting at a table with him, some ISKCON fundraiser, and the speaker, whoever was speaking, said, money can't buy happiness. And Ambarish turned to me and spoke with such deep conviction. He said, you know, people who don't have money hope that that is true, that money can't buy happiness. Because if you need money to buy happiness, well, you're up a creek without a paddle if you don't have money, right? So he said, people who don't have money hope that that is true. And then again, with very deep conviction, he said to me, but those who have money know that it's true. They actually know that it's true. They cannot buy happiness. And Krishna gives a formula in Bhagavad Gita. Okay, you want to become happy? What do you need to become happy? Prabhupada said, what is their opulence? Someone said, oh, they're so opulent in America. Prabhupada said, they don't have the opulence of a moment's peace of mind. That's real opulence. And then to have, oh, the plastic bags. All right. The death of a thousand cuts with someone with a plastic bag. So, you want to become happy? Okay, fine. You have to have peace of mind. Okay. How do you have peace of mind? Bhagavad Gita says, you have to have controlled senses. That's the progression. That's the pattern of how it works out. And to have that peace of mind and to have those controlled senses, we know that it's not simply, Prabhupada says you could put a snake in a... I actually saw this. I was in, where was I? I was in Bombay, Mumbai, and I had gone to the American Express office to get some money. Somebody had wired something for, we were buying something for the deities. And there was a snake charmer. You know, you've all seen the cartoon movies. Do you know how, it has nothing to do with the music, by the way? That's not how, the snake is calibrating a certain distance, that it's striking distance. And the charmer, you ever notice, keeps moving back and forth. So he's staying one step ahead of the snake, and the snake is calibrating. So he moves, the snake moves, he moves, the snake. So that's actually what's going on. The snake is calibrating the distance. So a moment's in attention, and once the snake gets target lock, you're in trouble. So I actually saw this afterwards. The man put the snake in a basket. And then at some point, he actually checked the basket to see what was happening with the snake, and the snake bit him in the arm. I actually saw it. So we can repress the senses. We can restrain the senses, put a snake in the basket. But as soon as you take the lid off the basket, the snake will strike. It's just, that's the way it is. It's the nature of the thing. Therefore, we know the example, Bhagavad Gita, one has to be moored. The senses have to be absorbed. The consciousness has to be moored in a higher taste, a higher object. Vridhananda reminded me of it. You were talking about how somehow or other Prabhupada was sitting and the sun broke. I was up here in this room here, in Prabhupada's darshan room, and it was a cold and windy day, blustery day. Everyone was all rugged up, as they say in Australia. And for one moment, the clouds parted, and a golden shaft of light came out. It was bathing Prabhupada, just like a little square, only Prabhupada in this light. And Prabhupada, who'd never missed a thing, picked up on the mood and the mood of the devotees and said, yes. He said, someday you will feel this sun just like your lover's embrace. I was in San Diego. Prabhupada was peeling an orange, a tangerine. And just spontaneously, he remarked, he held it in his hand, said, how can they say there's no God? It comes so nicely packaged. You know, nice package, individual servings. We will die. You say, how did the world end? Not with a bang, but a whimper. How will this world end? We'll be suffocated in plastic. That's what's going to do us in. It's not going to be a great, you know, apocalyptic event. Of course, we know what the Bhagavatam, so we follow the Bhagavatam. But it'll be plastic. So, but Krishna's made a perfect array. You have a nice tangerine, biodegradable, individual segments. So how can they say there's no God? But for Prabhupada, he was always absorbed in this reality. I saw Prabhupada when the temple room used to be over here, and Prabhupada was offering arti. I think it was on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance day. And Prabhupada was offering the arti. We didn't have big Rukmini Dwarkadish. We only had the small deities. And Prabhupada rang the bell and then went to open the curtain. But before he opened the curtain, he peeked, and it looked just like a little boy would look into a room of a very important person. You wouldn't just jump in there, you know. So Prabhupada rang the bell, pulled the curtain back, just looked in very carefully, like, has Krishna actually finished his prasad? Then he opened blew the conch and opened the curtain. So the point I'm trying to make is we want to become happy. And we have the example of Hiranyakasipu, who has everything possible. This world is the original, what do you say, been there, done that? This world is the original, been there, done that. We have done it all. You've already had it. You've been Indra, you've been President of the United States. We've had it. And none of it, see the death of a thousand cuts. Whatever you're going to do, do it once. Do it, but do it once. Thank you. I asked for it. I'm just thinking of the time factor. Whatever you do, do it quickly. Because it doesn't matter, but the message is important. I'm irrelevant. The message is important. Let us say it this way. We are conditioned. Prabhupada talks here about Arya, or the progressive march. It is human instinct to make it. The human is different than the animal. Atato brahma jigyasya. In Mayapur, you see those birds who make that nest. You know that they take the edges of the coconut palm or whatever, they pull them together, and they make that teardrop nest. You see it, and it's quite a feat, actually, when you study it. None of them went to Caltech. None of them. As a sidelight, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, at the time, was the biggest suspension bridge in the world. One of the key factors for figuring out how to design the Golden Gate Bridge, you know what they did, the guys at Caltech and MIT? They studied spider webs. And those guys didn't go to Caltech, those little... I don't even know if they have a brain. I think that... I don't even know if they have a central nervous system. But that is aside. You study those birds, and they make this nest. And it's a fantastic construction. Matasmita Yanam Aponam Cha. But they never bust out of that. They never think, enough of this teardrop. I'm putting on a sun porch this time, you know. They never think, you know, hey, I want to go with it. You know, I'm going to go, you know, whatever it is. I'm going to follow a Frank Lloyd Wright design. They just do it that way. But the human form of life, increase, expansion, growth, this progressive march, it is part of the fabric of our being. It's a gift of the human form, because it ultimately will bring you 1980. Prabhupada one time said, life is meant to put things into two piles. Do you know what those two piles are? Biodegradable, non-biodegradable. Edible, non-edible. What are the two piles that human form of life is meant to put all things into? Sat na sat. That which is permanent, that which is temporary. And then Prabhupada quoted Chanaka Pandit. He said, you should never give up the permanent for the temporary. You will lose both. It's a great mantra. You should never give up the permanent for the temporary. You will lose both. So the human form of life has that progressive march, instinctually, spiritually. But we've been cheated. We have been diverted. I remember, I was telling devotees in Chicago, the first time I have a conscious memory of being cheated, I was a young boy, went with my older brother. I was probably 6, he was probably 8, maybe he was 9, because there was a cusp there. My father used to joke, he used to say about the two of us when we went out on some escapade, he used to say, two halfwits make a nitwit. So the two of us went out into the field, my brother and I, and he was supposed to watch over me. And I remember my mother had given us some money for buying some snick snack, some, you know, refreshment item during the, there was an intermission. And I remember, lusty little kid that I was, I remember calculating with my brother how to get the biggest bang for our buck. I think it was, my mother gave me a quarter. For 10 cents, you could get a candy bar, and 50 cents, 15 cents, you could get a soda to go along with it. And my little senses would be titillated and life was good. So I remember calculating what was the biggest and thickest and, you know, and there was a candy bar called a Big Hunk. And it was about this big, and it was about this thick. I thought, well, there it is. My brother and I conferred, and I plunked down my 10 bucks. The guy gave me the bar. I opened it up. There was a cardboard tray inside. The packaging was this big, but the little bars were about this big. I said, what did I want? I've been hosed. Now I've been cheated. I was crushed. It was shocking that someone would actually consciously cheat me. I thought, these people set out to rip me off. And dummy that I am, I fell for it. You know, it was a turning point in my life. I'm thinking, wait a minute, not everybody is all good, and not everything they're saying is true and for my benefit. It was a real shock to me, you know. So we have been cheated. People don't like to be cheated. We are being, do you know that 80% of the people, when they go into a supermarket, will turn left? Do you know that most people go to the supermarket, they go for bread or milk? And you know where they put the bread and milk? In the back of the supermarket. So you have to walk past everything. What do they set at the ends of the aisles and at the front? They're called impulse items. Because they figure they just, you know, you'll just, they're flashy, they're colorful, and you just buy it. Do you notice that there's no windows in a supermarket? Do you know why? Because they don't want natural light. There's no clocks, because you don't get the sense of passage of time. You walk in there to get bread and milk, and they're squeezing you for every drop they possibly can. The whole thing is set up. I remember asking my father, hey, this TV comes for free. You know, in those days before, cable and all that stuff. I said, you know, the TV, they're giving us all this stuff for free. My father said, oh, no. That television is the one-eyed idiot, the one-eyed guru. You don't notice all those advertisements? Take a kid. I have a grandson. Put him, which I don't do, put him in front of a he's perfectly happy playing with a paper bag or sticks. You probably saw kids playing with an inner tube, you know. Probably made the point that children should be taught to live simply. That's the greatest gift a parent can. Prabhupada said the greatest gift you can give your children is a taste for austerity. That they're simple life. Then they're peaceful and happy. So you take a kid, he's playing with some sticks or, you know, paper bag, or anyone who, you know, experienced Western Christmas in a well-to-do family. An hour after it's over, the kids have put aside the toys and are playing with the boxes, if they're big enough, you know. So, well, what was I going to say? Just making sure you're listening. No, I actually did forget. Thank you. That television, you take the kid, he's sitting with a paper box, he's perfectly happy. You put him in front of the television or whatever it is, immediately he's filled with all kinds of desires that he didn't have. It's meant, you know, as a delivery system for lusty desires. So they're getting their money's worth. So the simple point is that all around us, we have to be wary. We have to be cautious that we are being exploited at every moment. This world is designed to divert us from, instead of calculating how am I advancing in spiritual life by measurable qualities, we are measuring how many toys. How much? What is it? What is the other bumper sticker? The one who dies with the most toys wins. I'm sorry, my friend. The one who dies with the most toys still drops dead. He still dies. All the toys go to the dimwit relatives. So the Sariputta said there's an example, and I forget where they did it, Cornell or somewhere. You put on these glasses that invert everything. In other words, there's some kind of paramedic, if that's the right word, that flips things, you know. So everything's, you know, all of a sudden, the floor's on the ceiling, the ceiling's on the floor. It's completely discombobulating. You are completely akimbo, kittywampus, whatever word you want to use. And then they have you do simple tasks, like try to bounce a ball. Can you imagine all of a sudden you're trying to bounce a ball off the ceiling? And here's a real one that people just completely were stumped with. Pouring a glass from a pitcher into a glass. Can you imagine trying to hold the glass, pour the water down, and up it goes into the glass? I mean, you know. But here's the bizarre thing, two bizarre things. After some time, and I don't remember it being too long. I remember it being a couple days, maybe 36 hours. The brain adjusts, and you actually, with the glasses on, you actually see things properly. And you can bounce the ball, you can pour the water, everything's like realigned itself. We are in that condition. Everything is kittywampus, topsy-turvy. We think with this body. We think if we put a little something on the tongue and the C fiber is firing, happiness, 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 you know. I was on the plane with a pilot. I'm dressed like this. I'm flying on the plane. We were flying from Denver to Boise. It was a small plane. The pilot got out. So I said to him, I said, hey, man, you know, I mean, my dear friend, I said, you're out here flirting with the stewardess. I didn't say that, which is what he was doing. I said, you're out here getting some refreshment. I said, you know, if you don't mind me asking, who's flying the plane, you know? He said, oh, don't worry. He said, it is on autopilot. And obviously, I didn't look too happy with that. I mean, you know, whoever Krishna wants to kill, no one can save. Whoever Krishna wants to save, no one can kill. That's fine. But Prabhupada said, devotees are fearless, but we're not fools. So I was a little concerned. The man said he's on autopilot. And the plane is getting signals, and it was something far out. It was like 120 signals per minute. It was always getting recalibrations because the wind, gravity, inertia, so many forces are acting on the thing, right? So it was constantly course correcting. And I was thinking, I'm like that. I am constantly course correcting. Am I happy? Am I happy now? Oh, wait, am I happy now? Am I happy now? Oh, wait, am I happy now? Am I happy now? We're always calculating, you know, is my body happy? Is my mind happy? Is my tongue happy? Is my, you know, we're always in a feverish, what is it, like pants on fire? Cartoon movies, a guy runs out of the house with his hair on fire, his pants on fire. We are like that. Our senses are on fire. And we are completely absorbed in constant calibration. Am I happy now? Am I happy now? Am I happy now? So, back to the glasses. So, and I'll bring in this pants on fire in a moment. After some time, the mind adjusts. We are conditioned like that, thinking that happiness is based on the body. But here's the even more bizarre thing. When you take the glasses off and return to your quote-unquote normal state, everything's upside down. And you have to go through the same thing. You're pulling the water, you know? And it takes some time for the mind to reorient itself back to normal vision, normal experience, normal reality, so-called. We're in the same boat. We've been able to see through the petty, paltry, painful, pernicious, I could go on for the piece for some time, material world. We've had the ability, this is not happening. But in Krishna consciousness, it takes some time to reorient ourselves. That actual happen. Prabhupada wrote me a letter. I was complaining about something, you know. And Prabhupada wrote, such a nice letter. Prabhupada wrote back, you know, here's how to fix the thing and this and that. Okay, fine, you know, this and that. But Prabhupada said, really, if we chant 16 rounds, follow the regular principles, follow the program, serve the devotees, become absorbed in the Sankirtan mission, we will come to the point very soon of being pleased, simply knowing Krishna's pleased. Imagine if that was our measure. Our measure of happiness was, is Krishna pleased? Marge was talking about it yesterday. If I'm simply doing what Krishna, if I'm doing something that pleases Krishna, and if that was my measure, I would be happy in every condition. Which brings me, because we should end, brings me to the point I wanted to make. The Hiranyakasipu, in spite of gaining whatever we've had in the past and more, we should learn by hearing Bhagavatam. Whatever we possibly could dream of, Hiranyakasipu had in spades, as they say in America. And he was not happy. He was not satisfied. He simply wanted more and more and more. J. Paul Getty, at the time, the richest man in the world, he said there's only two types of people in this world. This is a man who owns whatever he wants. He said there's only two types of people in this world. People you pay to stay with you and people you pay to stay away from you. Which means he had no sense of friendship or love or succor in this world. Horrible condition. Like Diogenes, you know, looking for an honest man, looking for one person who actually loved him. Ambarish was in the same boat, frankly. Ambarish, when he came to the temple, well, here's the setup. I was the temple treasurer and the Sankirtan leader. I was supposed to raise the money and how to spend it. And we had an excellent temple president, Govardhan Prabhu, such a kind, really nice gentleman. He was such a good person. And I could never repay him. So we needed storm windows. If we'd gotten storm windows, we could save like $300 a month. Our heating bill was $600 in the winter, you know. They're insulated, but if you're out here in California where it's always a balmy 70 degrees. So we were talking, and it was something like $2,000. In those days, we really didn't have any money. We really had no money in those days. So, you know, it was just, I'd done the research, I was reporting to Govardhan Prabhu, that, you know, it's $2,500, cheapest price I can find, and so, you know, kiss that one off. This we had Bhagavad Gita class Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So after Bhagavad Gita class Wednesday, we were talking, and this young man, Bhakta Al, he was a college student at Tulane, or I forget where he was, some university. So we said, he said, oh, what are you talking about? We said, oh, storm windows, well, we can't afford them, they're $2,500. We could save, you know, over the year, we could save $1,000, whatever it is, but, you know, we can't get over the hump of buying them. He said, oh, and we just said, you know, don't worry about it, Al. Just, you know, read Bhagavad Gita, take prasad, be happy. He's a college student. What's he going to do? He doesn't have any money. So that's what we were thinking. 3 days later, there's, you know, Sam's storm windows. There's some guy out there putting storm. You know, the devotees told me, he said, whoa, whoa. I said, you know, if it's a free home demonstration, have at it. I said, but we don't have any money, so we can't pay you for this. He said, no, it's prepaid. I said, let me see. And it was a prepaid bill. It was signed Alfred Ford. And Alfred Ford is like a big name. It's like saying Berlin, India. We're off the track, but it's kind of fun. There's a tape, Prabhupada's on a morning walk, and somebody says, oh, there's T.G. Birla. Somebody says, no, it's C.F. Birla. So, no, I think it's G.K. Birla. Prabhupada says, any Birla will do. So, you know, it's like that. Rockefeller, you know, is in Detroit, the Ford name is a big deal, you know? So I thought, well, somebody's goofing on this guy. It's like signing Alfred E. Newman or, you know, been too fat or what are you saying, you're Chinese or whatever, you know. Oh, hey, if he's willing to accept it, I'm not going to rock the boat. So up the windows went. And then I remember, I told Govardhan, our temple president, and he said, you know, he's smarter than me. He thought, wait a minute, you think it's that Bhakta? I said, no way. He said, well, and we had to wait the next couple of days. It was Bhagavad Gita class. We asked Bhakta Al. I said, are you Alfred Ford? Thank you for the storm windows, if you are. He said, yes. He said, well, why didn't you tell us? He said, oh, no. He said, I have never known who my friends were. I never knew if they were with me because of the money or because of a party. He used to have parties at his house. His parents would be in Europe. They'd trash the whole, just rip up ceilings, you know, burn furniture, destroy the house, practically speaking, interior. And then just hire somebody, redecorate it. And when the parents came home, oh, we thought it was a surprise. We thought you'd like it. We redesigned it French Mediterranean. Oh, thank you very much. Parents, very nice children. So he never knew who his friends were. He said, but the devotees. He said, you genuinely cared about me, my real self. So you loved me in the real sense. And you didn't care who I was. And you didn't want anything from me. He said, I know that devotees are my real friends. That's why he became. That's one of the real. Of course, Prabhupada later on scooped him up. It's way off the track, but it is blissful. When Prabhupada, Ambarish was used to people flattering him, you know, and he didn't like it. I mean, Ambarish is he's a smart guy, you know, behind that simple, gentle nature. He's nobody. Krishna didn't give that money to a fool, I'll tell you that right now. So he said people were always flattering him, you know. Prabhupada, when they introduced him as Alfred Ford, Prabhupada said, I have one joke they tell in India. This is Prabhupada's joke to Ambarish. A young, intelligent man who has millions of dollars, who everybody else would flatter and fawn all over, Prabhupada, completely selfless and detached, said to him, there was a man who, in India, this is Prabhupada's joke, I heard him tell it, a blindfolded man could name any car, he could just, by the sound. So to test him out, they blindfolded the man, and an ambassador car goes by, vroom, vroom, vroom. Man says, ambassador, got it right. Next car, boom, boom. Man's blindfolded. He says, Fiat. Got it right. Next thing that goes by was a tinkerer, or a man who sells, you know, pots and pans and sharpens knives. So you can imagine everything banging and clattering, and he goes by. So the blindfolded man says, Ford. Ambarish loved it. Prabhupada said, Ford stands for a found on road dead. Prabhupada said, or fix or repair daily. It was so blissful and charming. So the point I was getting at was that it is not, here we have Hiranyakasipu who has everything beyond we can imagine, beyond we'll get in this life or next life or have had in so many past lives. Been there, done that 1,000 times. And he's not happy. And yet we have Prahlad, who by the qualities, by simply being a surrendered devotee, is happy in any condition. And I wanted to tell one last story about being happy in any condition. Vishnujanmarsh told me this. Vishnujanmarsh, another one of the, just like Tamal Krishnamarsh, is one of the great heroes of our society. You know, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and Tamal Krishnamarsh is one of those giants. Similarly, Vishnujanmarsh is one of those giants. Now, Prabhupada said his voice can charm the whole world. So he had a traveling party, and I don't think he'd hooked it. It was just him, Kirtananda and Tamal Krishnamurti. They weren't with him yet. And they did kirtan in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And they were arrested by the good old boys. I mean, those days, if you got out of a van in a dhoti and kurta and sikh and tilak, you might as well, you know, people were wondering, where's the mother pod? You know, you might as well have come from Mars. You could literally, I remember walking into grocery stores, small family grocery stores, you know, on Sankirtan in the south, and literally the entire market freezing. You know, you get that sense, people are looking at you, look, and everyone's like, I mean, anyone who knows from those days will remember. So the devotees were arrested in Chattanooga, Tennessee. They had kirtan, and they were arrested for holding a parade without a license. So they had, you know, it was a city jail. They had just one big cell. They had all the devotees. Prabhupada did confirm that an army runs on its stomach. So you have a group of brahmacharis led by a sannyasi, and they were beelining, you know, Khichdi every day. There's a whole story about Hanuman. He was supposed to guard Jagannath Puri from the, you know, from the ocean. But every day they were just giving him Khichdi. Finally he bailed out and went to Ayodhya just to get some nice lugloos and puris. And while he was gone, the ocean flooded. He came back, everyone was chastised, and went before Jagannath. And Hanuman, as a brahmachari, offered his argument. He said, every day Khichdi. So Lord Jagannath accepted, okay, you can't just feed a brahmachari every day Khichdi. You just can't do it. It was a bona fide excuse that he went to Ayodhya. So in a similar fashion, you know, the devotees, they were dreaming of going to Dallas. Big temple, beautiful deities, and a knockout Sunday feast. They were, you know, this was, you know, it's a bona fide attachment. We don't have time, but some other time I'll tell the story about Tamal Krishnamurti and the gulab jamun he got from Prabhupada. So they're all locked up in this cell. They're missing the Sunday feast. Nectar of Devotion had just come out. And there's a story of the Brahman, you know, Manasa Seva, you know, Seva within the mind. And he cooks the sweet rice in his mind, and he checks to see if it's cool, and he burns his finger, and in Vaikuntha, Lord Vishnu laughs. You know that story there. We had just read that. It had just come out. So Vishnu John Marsh had the idea, let's just cook the Sunday feast. We'll just do it all within our mind. But they also added pantomime. So imagine 15 people in this cell. Somebody's cutting tomatoes, imaginary potatoes. Someone's cooking the imaginary sweet rice. Somebody's frying the imaginary pakoras. And these good old boys, the cops, are getting really nervous. You know, they're thinking, you know, these guys, maybe they are from Mars. And what tipped them over the edge, they all sat down and took prasadam. Served it out. Everyone took prasadam. Vishnu John Marsh told me, he said, it's the only feast he went to that everything you wanted had been prepared. Everything was cooked perfectly, and there was more than enough for everyone. So they were all taking their pantomime prasadam, and, oh, Prabhu, this khichdi is so nice. Oh, fantastic on the pakoras. And then one of the devotees made up an imaginary plate, and he offered it to one of the good old boys. Would you like a plate? That was it. They said, that's it. You're out of here. They opened the cell. They said, northeast, southwest, pick a direction, but just leave, you know. Drove the devotees to their van, and the devotees went. And the sweet part of the story is they drove, we should be careful, no doubt, don't test Maya, but they drove at a rapid rate and got to the Dallas temple just in time for the Sunday feast. So it has a happy ending. My point being that we should not be like the spoon in the soup. Happiness is all around us. Happiness is in any circumstance. We've seen what to speak of Prabhupada at the time of death. I don't have time to tell it. But there's a fantastic story about Dr. Karana, Naveen Krishna's father. Naveen called him and said, please, Prabhupada's in Vrindavan, maybe you can do something, at least go see him. And Prabhupada had stayed at Dr. Karana's house at near the golf links in Delhi. And although he was a very stoic man, he was not one to show emotion, Dr. Karana. Very nice man, but he was, you know, reserved. He was an educated, reserved man. So he got all of his doctor friends, specialists in this and that, and they all drove to Vrindavan to see Prabhupada. You know, a caravan of black ambassador or white ambassador, we went to Vrindavan. And he told me, Dr. Karana personally, he's passed away now, but he told me, He said when he saw Prabhupada, he was shocked. He said, because he was a scholarly man, he said Prabhupada looked like Bhishma on the bed of arrows. Prabhupada said there was no fatty tissue. Dr. Krona said there's no fatty tissue, that the skin was pushing the nerves right onto the bones. Prabhupada said, Dr. Krona said an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Prabhupada was asking for a little massage. But, you know, an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Now, Dr. Krona was used to going into the sick rooms of patients. You know, and they're crying, they're asking for morphine, they're calling for their mother, they're saying, can you just give me 6 more weeks? I got to get my dimwit brother-in-law out of my will, you know, I got my granddaughter married, whatever. They all got some plan, right? He said, Prabhupada greeted them, this group of doctors, because they'd come 3.5 hours, 2.5 hours, whatever it is from Delhi. He's in this completely, unbelievably painful condition. And Prabhupada says, Dr. Krona, how are you? He was introduced to all the doctors. Prabhupada said, you must be tired. You've come such a long distance. Please take some rest. Then take some prasadam. After you've rested and take prasadam, then come and we'll talk. As a perfect gentleman, Prabhupada was graciously greeting them. And Dr. Krona, even when he told me the story, he started to cry. He said he was asking me, how am I? How is your family? He said he just couldn't believe it. So, and there's many examples. I saw a devotee leave his body. As he was leaving his body, he put his arms up and said, Prabhupada, you've come. I mean, that's pretty mystical. So devotees in any condition, so many horrendous conditions. Bhakti Raghuramish got his leg blown off. You know, when the dacoits attacked the temple in Mayapur, his response was, I was thinking of getting it removed. It caused me trouble. I mean, devotees are just actually extremely blissful. So that's my simple point, that happiness is all around us if we become, to the degree that we become, Krishna conscious. We should not be like the soup and the spoon. And on the other side, the cautionary tale, even we become like Hiranyakasipu, we're just going to become more agitated, more unhappy, and more envious. Frankly, there's only one way out. It's as simple as that. Become Krishna conscious. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. And now, another austerity, we get to take Krishna prasadam. It's a rough life, but what can I say, Prabhu? Soldier on. Thank you. Prabhupada ki jai. Hey, Govinda.